Hello and welcome to this episode of Triggered and True, featuring renowned emotional health consultant, Laura Dunkett. Thank you for being here and thank you for investing the time to learn how to take care of your soul. If this podcast sparks any questions, feel free to submit a question by going to triggeredandtrue.com, scrolling to the bottom of the page and clicking ask. If you would like to learn more about Laura Dunkett, we encourage you to follow Laura on Instagram and Facebook. Also, a great resource for you to consider is the Compassion Method Master Course. This course is a deep dive into Laura's life work, the Compassion Method. The Compassion Method is a process that empowers you to learn to see and comfort your internal pain and to discover your true self, that beautiful, wonderful part of you that has been there all along, but has simply been covered up. To obtain the Master Course, go to compassionmethod.net, and as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount that can be obtained by typing in the coupon code podcast50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code podcast50. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, Laura. It feels like it has been a really long time since we have recorded an episode of Triggered to True. Because it has been.
It has been, yeah. Feels like it, and it has been.
Today, we're going to start off with a question from one of our listeners. Again, thank you, everyone who sends in questions. We try to get them answered or replied back. And this question is, this person says they are struggling with someone in their family, someone that's close to their family, who is ignorantly living from a very religious paradigm and undermining her kids' identities in the process. So the question is, how do I stay connected to people I'm close to? And I'm going to kind of change her question a little bit, because the fact that this person's living from a religious paradigm is not really all that relevant. Really, the thing is, how do I stay connected to people I'm close to when they're doing things that are hurtful? And this person living from this religious paradigm is hurting. And how do I stay close to them and interact with my kids in that too? So basically, how would you maybe model that type of behavior for your kids? So, you know, how do you model for your kids how to stay in relationship with people that are not the most pleasant to be around? So,
you know, with those questions, and I like how you kind of broadened the question, even though that's the specific, but yes, when people are doing things or treating ourselves or those close to us in ways that we don't like, how do we handle that? How do we still stay connected to them? And really, the question always comes back to us. We want it to be about, what do we do about that person? But really, if that person's triggering you or bothering you, it's something inside of you that needs to be discovered, needs to be explored. Because whenever we feel that this other person has power, or this other person is the problem, the villain in our story, it means that there's something going on inside of us. And so that's where you start. You start with, why does this person or their actions bother me? And explore what's triggering you in that.
That seems kind of upside down, because it should be about the other person, because they're the ones doing something wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, that's our knee-jerk reaction, and that's where we want the solution to come from. If that person changes, then I can be okay.
Yeah.
If that person doesn't do that bad behavior, then I can be okay.
And that's a very powerless place to live.
It is, because person...
And depressing place.
Exactly. And eventually, we pretty much have to get rid of everyone in our lives. Because everyone is going to do something at some point in our lives that we're not going to like. And if they're the villain and they're the problem, and I need to get them to stop. We all know we can't control anyone but care for ourselves. And so then we're stuck. So we have to get rid of them, or we have to keep them in our lives in a way that we don't feel comfortable with. But if we actually took care of what was going on inside of us, and we came out of the primal triggered brain, and we came into that adult brain, we would know how to connect with that person. Mm-hmm. But we don't know how, because we're trapped in that trigger.
Yeah. Well, I really like that question, because I think it's a great lead into our topic for today. So today we're talking about codependence. And I think once people hear your definition of codependence, they're going to understand why that question fits this topic so well. So define, give us your definition of codependence, Laura.
There's, you know, a lot of, you know, buzzwords out there about codependencies and books, and they're great resources, but it seems like sometimes it can become a little overcomplicated, where we don't understand really what codependency is. And then even if we do understand it, we don't know what to do with it. So
please simplify for us.
We're going to take it down. We're going to make it simple. And I like this one sentence because it simplifies it enough that you can ask yourself this one question and you can right away be able to know if you're in codependency or not. So the question you'd ask yourself is, or the definition of codependency is, I'm not okay if blank isn't okay. I need blank to be okay for me to be okay. And in that blank, it could be a person, it could be God, it could be a circumstance, but we are codependent with a person and we need them to be okay for us to be okay. And if you ask yourself that simple question, you can tell if you're codependent in a situation.
Could you give your definition of being okay again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to be okay is clear-minded, tender-hearted, and at peace. That's how we know that we're okay. And doesn't mean we don't feel other emotions. If someone says something hurtful to you, or, you know, someone has hurtful actions, we are emotional people. We're going to feel things, but we feel it from a clear mind, a tender heart, and being at peace. And then that's where we communicate from, if communication is needed for whatever behaviors that we're addressing.
Yeah, I really like the words that you use in that definition of being okay, because it doesn't say happy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say joyful, because we're not always going to be those things.
Yeah.
But one of your guiding principles is that we can learn to be okay in any situation or circumstance.
Exactly.
Which means we can learn to be clear-minded, tender-hearted, and at peace.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're in that place, we're going to be okay no matter what, because we're in that clarity and in that peace and in that tender-heartedness that we're able to approach both our own internal world, but also be able to communicate with others as well.
So back to the listener question, what we're going to be talking about is not so much about the how-tos of how to live with someone that is hard to deal with, because mm-hmm. you could write reams of books about all the different things people mm-hmm. do that make it hard to be around.
Yeah,
and then you could develop little strategies for each little idiosyncrasy that people have. And
I think very thick book.
I think there are lots of books out there about how to deal with difficult people, mm-hmm. how to deal with people that do this and do that.
But we find it doesn't really work, because it's not ever a one size fits all, both for ourselves and for the person that we're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah. So you oftentimes share a personal example that goes back, you know, all the way into your childhood of some behaviors that you would do to try to help others be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could be okay. So want to just share that again for maybe those that haven't heard the story or need to hear it again, which is probably all of us.
Definitely. So, you know, I talk a lot about our triggers, and our triggers are when we cause us to go into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And fight is obvious, you know, flight is obvious. We want to run away. Freeze is pretty obvious. We freeze up. But fawning is one that we've shared in past podcasts. I'm just doing a little bit of a refresher on it. But fawning is when you are trying to help somebody, or you're trying to make someone okay through a triggered response of, I'm not okay, so I'm going to do everything I can do to make you okay. A lot of times it comes from being raised in an environment that potentially was angry or chaotic, or, you know, in my life situation, it wasn't necessarily anger, but it was just having a lot of siblings and a lot going on. And it felt like if I could help relieve some of that pressure for my parents, my caregivers, then they would have the time and the energy to meet my needs. So I would fawn and try to do more chores and watch younger siblings and try to make them smile and laugh. When I was younger, my nickname was Beamer, because I would make people smile by, you know, just being happy around them. So me being happy allowed other people to be okay. But the thing about it is, it's still indirectly trying to get your need met, but my parents still weren't able to meet my needs, because I would keep helping and then all the resources would still be going to other places, because I didn't know how to have needs and I didn't know how to be okay, even if my family wasn't okay. I had to make them okay for me to feel okay, because it felt chaotic. It felt overwhelming. And it was, you know, coming from a good heart. I got a lot of kudos for it, pats on the back. And, you know, people saying, oh, you're such a good girl because you're able to make everyone okay around you. But it came from a codependency of, I wasn't okay, but if I can make my mom and dad okay, and I'm going back to like 3 or 4 years old, it starts so young. I was 3 or 4 years old thinking, if I can make them okay, then I'm going to get what I need. I'm going to be okay.
That's a huge responsibility for someone so young to carry all that kind of weight. And my guess is that perhaps people listening are maybe starting to identify in their life where they might be codependent. So that's one from childhood where you were codependent with your parents or your caregivers, like you needed them to be okay.
Yeah. So that I could be okay. And it felt life or death. It felt high stakes because I was so young and my brain was so not underdeveloped, but it was just still in the developmental process. And so I couldn't, even if I was as resourceful as I possibly could. And believe me, I mean, I was doing like dishes at 3 or 4 years old. So I was very resourceful. My brain is still not developed enough to be able to help an adult to be okay. And so I really got stuck in that and, you know, trapped in some ways where my brain got stuck because I was trying to do things that were too big for me to do. And the reason why I share that is because it's relevant to codependency, that many times in early childhood development, when you're over responsible or have too high of expectations on you before your brain is developed, you're going to get stuck. And then when you bump up against similar things that happened in your childhood, you're going to go right back to your brain saying, I can't be okay because my caregivers are not okay. And that's really where the root of it starts. It can be a different flavor, a different way that it shows itself in each of our childhoods differently. That's really where it's going to originate from.
So then as that developed as a child, just talk about how that could develop as you become an adult. Because then eventually the script flips and you have children and you're
exactly.
A parent.
Exactly. Yep.
And it'd be very easy, I would think, then for a parent to develop that codependent relationship with their children.
Exactly. I feel like codependency with kids is one of like the less identified, codependencies, because here we are as their caregiver. So it doesn't look like we're trying to make our kids okay to be okay. That's definitely what we're doing. Because if our kids are misbehaving, we're not okay. If our kids make a mistake, we're not okay. You know, if our kids don't do what we want them to do, we're not okay. So it shows us how codependent we are, and then how much of our discipline comes from a place of codependency, which then in turn is more punishment than training, because we're disciplining out of a frantic place of codependency. So it definitely plays out parenting. I mean, I see that all the time.
Well, and then the marketers know how to manipulate that. So that's why all that candy's in that checkout line. Right down there at that
parents
little kid's
can't
level.
Say no, exactly.
Right down there at about that 2.5-3 feet level. And there mm-hmm. it is, right at their eyeballs. And
the parent goes right back to being little too. We've got two 5 year olds, really. One wants candy and one's trying to fight against the one that wants candy. And we've got, you know, kids being codependent with one another, even though it's a parent child relationship.
Yeah. And then the pressure, like the shame, like the feeling of shame exactly. from a parent of like, oh my gosh, my kid yep. is
yeah.
not okay. And then now I'm not mm-hmm. okay. And I'm feeling all this shame of everybody looking at me. And so I'm just going to buy the candy and then yep. maybe get out to the car and throw it away.
Yeah.
Or nobody and how, can see it. Or they exactly. just let them have it.
No, exactly. Either way you lose, because shame motivated you, not a place of being okay, clear-minded, tender-hearted, at peace parenting would be okay. Even if the child threw a fit, because they wouldn't need the child not to throw a fit for them to be okay. They could let their no be no, because they weren't trying to get the child to be okay so they could feel okay. And that's why, you know, like people are very codependent with what other people think. You know, that's why in a grocery store, we act different than we would at the store, than we would at home, because we're so worried about what they think. So you could put, and remember how I said there's a blank, I'm not okay if blank isn't okay. I'm not okay if the people in the store aren't okay. I need the people in the store to be okay. That's a codependent relationship with people you've never met before, that you continue to compromise who you are, compromise your relationship with your child to make sure they're okay so that you can feel okay about yourself. And you could put social media in there. I'm not okay if people on social media don't like me. I need them to like me to be okay. You know, it's a big one that a lot of people are connected to, and we can be okay even if people on social media are not okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I would say that it's probably more obvious to identify this in some of our real close relationships, but that example you gave of the people in the store, like we don't want to put them out. We don't want to make them endure that. Like,
For whatever those reasons are, that ends up being a very strong point why people don't discipline their children in public.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what about, you know, I think another place where this could rear its head quite frequently is in marriage.
That's a very popular place to be codependent. I'd say between children and spouses, those are the most, you know, codependent, usually have the most opportunity for codependent relationship.
Because they're the people closest to you. That's where the hurt is the most.
Exactly. The stakes are higher. You know, the consequences feel, you know, more risky. You know, we have to keep everything okay because it's our home, it's our environment. And it gets pretty intricate how far we'll go to make others okay.
So the saddest part, as I've learned of codependence, the saddest part of that is when we're codependent, we think we're doing this to stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we're being baited in, like, you need to make this person okay so you can stay connected. But the reality is the exact opposite is happening.
Yep.
So do you want to expound on that?
Nobody's okay when you're in codependency. So like we think we are, but what we're doing is we're building villains in our stories and heroes in our stories. And we're having assumptions and we're thinking that if I can make you okay, if I can walk on eggshells around you and do everything that I can do to manage your reactions, then we're going to have a great relationship. That's what most marriages are thinking. But what ends up happening is you become even more resentful towards one another. You end up, again, like I said before, compromising yourself and compromising your beliefs or the things that you are close to your heart, because it ends up being that you have to maintain the peace and make sure everyone's okay at all costs. So it gets the very thing we're doing, thinking that we're helping, is actually causing the other person to actually not be okay, because they become dependent on us to make them okay. And then when we don't, there's resentfulness and bitterness. That's what I found in helping people and trying to be the fixer and trying to make my environment okay by fawning, is that the more I did, the more people wanted me to do. And when I couldn't do, it wasn't, oh, that's okay, you've done so much. It was, what's wrong with you? You have to give. And it was so wild to realize, and people could say, well, that's terrible that they would tell that to you. What I recognized right away when I heard it is, it's not them telling it to me. It's what I've created by being codependent myself, that I've created a dependency on me, because codependency is a dependency. So we're dependent, we're addicts to either making the person okay, or that person is addicted to us making them okay.
Well, and that type of thought process is very exhausting, because you have to manually working so hard, which would explain the high burnout rate, because you're talking about when you first started meeting with people one-on-one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the high burnout rate for consultants and counselors and pastors
and police officers
and all these folks that take that weight of the world on themselves that they've got to fix and...
Thankfully, that healing I talked about of my own story of being able to know that I was going to be taken care of and that I didn't have to do to make everything okay. And I could just be, and I'd be loved and cared for, allowed me to just be in my consulting work. And so people could come in with horrible stories. And it's not that I didn't have compassion. It's not that I didn't help them walk through it, but I was okay, even if they weren't okay. I could be in that moment with them, but I didn't feel like I had to take care of them, because I knew at the end of the day, I couldn't help them, but I could help them help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a relief.
that part you said about how you could be with them. That exactly. is that is the most powerful thing we can do for another person in their really triggered state or in their pain is to just simply be with them.
And that is one of the saddest things about codependency is that you're so busy trying to make it okay with whatever means that you are, that you can never just stop and be with. So we never actually get the intimacy that our heart's longing for. So we have to do to frantically be okay.
Well, and it ends up being about you.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It might look very, like, especially how I did it with Connie, it might look very sacrificial. And it might look very, you know, good and doing the right thing, but it really was always about me. It was contingent on how I felt. And if I felt okay, then I could give love. And if I didn't feel okay, then it would be limited.
Mm-hmm. You know, this reminds me of a video that you shared with me a long time ago or a few years ago. And it was a link you sent me or you directed me to. And it was a dad and his toddler age, I believe his son.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a time lapse video, but it showed how much time was going on. But the son was just having a complete, you know, meltdown, tantrum, just, and it went on and on and on. And this time lapse video just shows the dad just hanging in there. So the son would come up to him and, you know, he's just crying and screaming. And sometimes he wanted to be held and sometimes he'd push away and sometimes he'd throw and hit and bite and kick and scratch. And he just, and the dad just stayed there with him. Just stayed there. And, was able to be with. And it was just such a powerful, I saw it as a huge metaphor too, just for life in general. When life is messy, when people are messy, you know, it's, we either go into fix it mode. I mean, that could be, it's kind of really that trigger thing, fight, flight, freeze. So like the fix it mode people are the fighters. Like I'm going to fight and fix this situation and fix this problem. Then there's the flighters that withdraw or freeze and they just kind of don't know what to do and some combinations of all of those. But in all of those cases, when we're triggered, when they're triggered, we're not with them.
Yep, exactly. And that is really, we think we might be, you know, because we were trying to get them to be okay, but that's not, that's the fixing. You really can't be with a person and be trying to fix them simultaneously.
Well, you have a very provocative phrase that you share from time to time. And and that phrase is, you say, you can't help or hurt others.
Yes, it's very controversial. But, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. But that's kind of, it is connected to codependency as well, because it's like this feeling that we feel that we can help people. And if we do enough, that person is going to be okay eventually. So we'll keep pouring in and pouring in, pouring in. But we've all heard the term, you know, happiness is an inside job. Well, getting help is an inside job too. We can support, we can encourage, we can be with, but we can't do for. So even if I went every single day to help someone, but they never could do it for themselves, at the end of the day, I'm not helping them. I can't help. They have to be able to do it for themselves. And so when we think we're helping people, but we're just constantly, ultimately codependent and trying to make them okay, then we can't take that step back to say that they need to do for themselves whatever it is that they need. They need to help themselves.
And then I think people could maybe see the helping, and I want to stay on the helping for a second, because there is a difference between an adult in the situation and a child. So a child has different levels of needs, obviously, than an adult. I mean, we know that on an obvious level, but yet oftentimes, subconsciously, we still try to treat adults like children.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because they're having that capital N need that we've talked about with the 10 gifts. And they're saying, I capital N need you to do X, Y, or Z. And so we are ultimately or subconsciously treating them as a child as we're meeting those 0 to 12 year old needs. But 0 to 12 years old is that's when you need help. We can help children. Children need help. But adults don't need help like that. We're not meant to be giving that type of help to them just as much as we wouldn't be feeding them baby food. We're not meant to be helping them in that way. But because they're triggered and they're little in their trigger, they're in their child brain, it makes it feel very believable that they need our help.
All right. And I think people could probably follow along with all of us so far. The one that gets a little dicey is the whole hurting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one does. And I mean, I like to kind of, you know, say like we can hurt people. Like someone could come up and punch you and somebody could say, you know.
Yeah, there's a little hyperbole here. Yeah, exactly. There's a little hyperbole going on.
Right? So a lot of times I'll explain it is in like we can lowercase h hurt people. And there's an exchange that happens if people treat us badly. And that does hurt because, like I said in the beginning, we're emotional. We feel things. We feel sad. It could scare us. We could feel different emotions connected to it. And that is definitely, we can lowercase h be hurt. But the uppercase h hurt that most people feel like is being inflicted upon them, or we feel like we're doing to others, comes from the codependency that I have the power to hurt someone else, but really it's already a pain within them that was not given compassion or a need wasn't met in that's causing them to feel that capital H hurt. And so the capital H hurt makes it feel so high stakes. It makes it feel life or death. It makes it feel so big. It makes it feel like the end of the world. And that's our primal child brain that's being impacted because we have pain that hasn't been taken care of. So if you had, you know, a wound on your shoulder and I came and poked on that wound, you're going to say, you hurt me. But if that wound was healed or you didn't have that wound and I came and poked on your shoulder, it wouldn't hurt. Or it would hurt very minorly, a lowercase h hurt if I poked on your shoulder. But we're having these open wounds that people's behavior or people are coming and they're pressing on that pain. And we think that whole pain is directly connected to that person. But that pain has already been there, usually for majority of our lives. It's just getting pressed on.
I think it might help like an example to really help people maybe bring this home. So I once had an employee say to me that such and such person was making their life miserable.
Yeah, that's
because
yeah.
This person had like an idiosyncrasy that this other person did that was it really grated at this particular employee. But what you're saying is that other person doesn't have that much power to actually do that hurt. It's that there's something inside of, in this case, the employee already that this person's idiosyncrasy is piling on top of. And you know, because essentially what the employee was saying, you need to do something about this superior, mm-hmm. because if you don't, I can't be okay. If you don't, mm-hmm. you've got to
exactly.
fix this.
Yep.
And, but what you're saying is that person doesn't have that kind of power.
Nope.
And the employee in this case has all the power.
Exactly. Because
the employee can go take care of themselves
mm-hmm.
and they can learn how to be okay in that person's presence. Yep. Doesn't mean
they can choose whatever they want to do, but right. It's not going to come from a place of trigger. It's going to come from a place of I can be okay even if you do X, Y, or Z.
Right. You may not enjoy it. It may not be, you know, so it's kind of like on levels. So you talk about a trigger, mm-hmm. 1 to 10, you know.
Yeah.
What do you say? 7 to 10, you're super triggered or whatever. But so maybe being around that person has you at a 10. And this could be your mother-in-law. This could be a person at work. This could be, you know, someone from your past that did something. But what you're saying is that when we learn to take care of our heart, we can bring mm-hmm. that down to where it's
yep.
lower.
Yeah.
May not
it's
be
still exactly.
a preference to hang around mm-hmm. with them.
Yep.
But
it may not be a preference. It could still feel uncomfortable. It could still be a 2 or 3 or maybe even a 4. And you could still feel it, but it's not going to feel the same. That's definitely coming from your internal lens, your internal perspective. That's coming from your early childhood development.
Yeah. It's no longer so high stakes.
Yeah. And I would see it I remember what stood out to me the most was when I personally felt like someone had hurt me so bad and they had done the worst thing ever. And I told, you know, because we always like to tattle. We always like to tell because it makes us feel better if we can tell another person. So I went and told on them to someone and they looked at me and they're like, doesn't really seem like that big of a deal. And at the moment I was like, what? You know,
it's a huge deal.
Yeah, exactly. I was like super triggered by their reaction. But when I had the time to take care of my trigger and recognize what was motivating it, feeling it, I looked back at that person. I was like, oh, that wasn't that person's pain. you know, they, I mean, like they could kind of see my viewpoint, but I felt like it was a 10, like you're talking about. And they're like, yeah, you know, it probably bothered me like a 2. And I was like, how is this possible? Because when you're in your own pain and your own trigger, it feels so big.
Well, and you want so someone real. To join with you in that.
Oh, we want someone to join in. Because if someone can join in with our blame, then we can keep avoiding our pain. So if they can agree with me that that person hurt me so bad and they are so wrong for how they hurt me, then I can feel okay because I can blame that person instead of actually taking care of what hurt me in the first place, which is nothing to do with what happened in the present.
So we're transitioning from as we're taking care of ourselves and we're being around difficult people and maybe recognize our codependencies, we're moving from these high stakes, out of control, I've got to fix this, they've got to change type thing to, and you've talked about this, when you're more functioning from your adult brain, it doesn't pack the same punch. And you talk about how you can hold on to hope in the midst of it. Like, so I think for me, as I've heard you talk about that before, a lot of this is, these are like the little like questions I ask myself, like, am I still hopeful? Do I have any vision for a hopeful solution in this scenario? And when that answer is no, I know that that I've moved into a very triggered place and when dealing with other people or situations, also a very codependent place.
I also like to add to that, just that one of my indicators is hope for sure, like you said, but then also villainizing. How big of a villain does this person feel to me? And that helps me actually know what's going on inside of me. If this person feels like a 10 and 0 to 10 villain status, if this person feels like a 10 as a villain, that's actually a reflection of I'm in a 10 in my pain. I'm at a 10 in my trigger.
Yeah. So then as we're taking care of our heart, you know, I would say the remote control exercise is a great mechanism, a great process to work our heart through, to help our heart identify where the pain is, and then to soften our heart by bringing the compassion in and then ultimately identifying what we need. And as we do that, the other thing you've talked about is that you'll become more curious.
Yeah. That's a really good sign, good indicator. As much as hopelessness or villainizing is an indicator that we're in a triggered moment, the curiosity is a sign that we're back into our adult brain, our true self. You're going to be naturally curious because that's how adults think. They want to find solutions and options and resources. They want to see different perspective. They want to have strategy because that's how a sophisticated brain works. When I'm in my child brain, it's all or nothing, life or death, high stakes, and it's majority of it is blame.
Yeah, and this has been really good for me because I've started to learn when a situation or a person really bothers me, I start to ask myself, I wonder why.
Yep.
What else
is going on? Great, simple question.
Why do they bother you?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. It's the question you never want to ask in the moment because you're triggered. You want to be like, of course they're bothering me because of these very real reasons. But if we could just ask ourselves with curiosity, why does this person bother me? There's a lot more it's going to say about us than it is going to say about them.
Well, I kind of alluded to the remote control exercise and that being a good process to work through. Just talk a little bit more about once we identify this codependent situation, and I'm guessing people have had some aha moments as they've listened to that. I mean, I've even had a few more aha moments. So how do we take care of our heart so we can learn to be okay without trying to fix or cut all these people out of our lives or whatever?
So the whole process in the remote control exercise is important, but I would say the pause, particularly with codependency, is the most important. Because remember how the pause helps us to stop blaming. When we stop blaming, it causes our external world to not be as big as what we're taking care of in our internal world. So I would say that pause, the stopping of our blame, and the redirecting to our heart is so important in codependency. And again, though, what codependency really is the sentence I said, that we're not okay if others aren't okay, but it's also our fixation on our external world being whatever we need it to be for us to be okay. So when you make that pause and you stop blaming, you redirect to your internal world, and that's where our true power is. We'll never be powerful if our external world determines if we're okay internally.
That is really good. Well, to conclude our time today, why don't you talk a little bit about the superpower?
The superpower. I know. It really does. So sometimes people will say, well, this feels like a lot. You know, this feels overwhelming. I can highlight a person that I feel codependent with, like you said, maybe a mother-in-law or someone that feels difficult to us. But people will say a lot of times that feels like a lot of work to do all this when she's just keeps treating me badly. You know, like that's a common thing that people will say. But the goal is to connect to the superpower, which means that you can be okay no matter what. That your mother-in-law, the person that's difficult to you, can say or do things that we feel are hurtful or we feel are bad or wrong, or she can be the villain in our life. But when I'm okay internally, whatever she's doing or not doing is not going to impact me in the same way. And that is the superpower, that I can be okay no matter what. That doesn't mean that we're, you know, a doormat. That doesn't mean that we're passive. It doesn't mean we don't have communication. We don't confront things. It just means that I don't have to have someone else change for me to be okay.
And that makes, not only is this work, I mean, we're doing this work for our hearts. We're doing this work for ourselves. And that obviously has a huge impact on ourselves, but there's a side benefit too. Talk about the side benefit of us being able to be okay, because we're going to bring this thing full circle.
Yep. This is the amazing thing, you know, using the mother-in-law example. So let's say she's been saying hurtful things. I do the remote control exercise. I take care of my heart. I explore why it really bothers me. I take care of my child self because that's where it's originating. I'm now clear-minded, tender-hearted, at peace. Now with that curiosity that you talked about, I'm going to actually seek to understand. I'm going to be curious with my mother-in-law. And what ends up happening is that person ends up usually being helped, even though we can't help anyone, but they end up being able to be more okay because I'm actually truly okay. And if our goal in codependency is to make them okay for us to be okay, it's like the reverse, but it's so powerful because once I'm okay, it doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that the other person is going to be okay, but time and time again, relationships are restored because we're no longer triggered by what they're doing. We can understand that they're coming from their pain, and we can actually rebuild relationships, and the person can actually be okay because we're okay.
Another example, not to pick on, I don't want to just pick on mother-in-laws.
I just picked one.
All the mother-in-laws out there, but it's just kind of a stereotypical thing. You know, that's why we use it. So I was thinking about just in my family, you know, with my children and my spouse, that thinking of kids, you know, kids can be challenging, difficult, you know, teenage years, all that stuff. And I've gone through that a number of times now. I'm on it with my third one right now, and I have one more to go. So
yay.
I can think of times when they were not okay. And it just, like, I couldn't even be in the same room. Cause I mean, it's girls. I live with all girls. So, you know, it can be, you know, a lot.
A lot of emotions,
you know, and there'd be times I couldn't even be around, you know, I just had to, like, I'd go to another room or whatever. I recognize I was flighting, you know, I'm recognizing that now. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of this is in hindsight, but I still have the opportunity to work through it now. And so if they're having a hard time and I'm going the other way, I'm not able to be with them. But if I can take care of me and I can be with, to your point, what you're talking about, the side benefit of, the main thing is that my heart's taken care of, but the side benefit is that I might actually be able to offer them a suggestion, lend them some comfort, lend them some compassion, give them a hug, be the dad in that video with the toddler that was just throwing the fit and just hang in there. I mean, how many parents, when their kids are acting up, send them to their room? Because not so much because they really a punishment, really a lot of it is just that they can't stand to be around it in that moment. They can't be okay with them throwing that fit or doing whatever, because it's just so ugly. So it really is a superpower. I mean, it's huge for your heart. And the side benefit is it's a blessing to everybody around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And whether we realize it or not, using the, you know, kids as an example, kids know when we're frantic inside and we're trying to get them to be okay. A big part of why kids don't listen to us is because they know we're not okay. But imagine coming and taking care of yourself and coming back to your kids and coming with that clear mind, that tender heart, and that peace. Your children will be so much more open to you. Anyone, whether children or anyone's going to be more open to you because you're not actually need anything from them. You're not using them because that's what it ultimately is. We're trying to manipulate and use them to get them to be okay so we can be okay. And so we come with an agenda. When you're truly okay within yourself, you come with no agenda, but to be with, to be curious, to seek to understand. And that's what creates true relationship. And like you said, the ability to have input, the ability to be able to share wisdom and to be able to help your children or help anyone in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Connection with others starts with the connection in our own heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you're saying, being with allows us to be with them. Because when I'm okay, I can be with you. When I'm not okay, I can't be with you.
Hmm. Well, do you have any homework in parting with our listeners? Do you have any homework that they could use to apply to their hearts with this, what we've shared today?
Definitely, you know, the remote control exercise and the compassion phrases, like you said, but specifically for codependency, write that sentence somewhere where you're going to see it often and start putting different people, different situations into that sentence and start kind of doing like a check with your heart. Okay. Am I codependent with this? And a lot of people will say like, no, I just like, you know, want the best for the person, or I just want them to change, or I just want something to happen. But if you put them into that sentence, I'm not okay if blank isn't okay, and I need them to be okay for me to be okay, it's really going to help you recognize the areas that you're codependent so that you can kind of focus on those and do some of the heart work that needs to go on behind the scenes.
And then you can engage that with curiosity. Yep, I wonder why.
I wonder why. Exactly. It's an adventure to discover why.
Yeah. It can be a scary adventure, but it is an adventure nonetheless.
It can definitely be a scary one. But if we're in our adult brain, we start to see it differently. Yeah. And that's what our goal is. And no longer being codependent, we can be the adult that can see things differently.
Well, I want to thank the listener that sent in that question because I think it was a great launching point for today's discussion. I want to thank everybody for listening. And definitely, if you have questions, feel free to send them our way and we'll do our best to get them answered. So, Laura, thank you for your time. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Triggered and True. Thank you again for joining us for this episode of Triggered and True. We hope that you enjoyed it. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, go to triggeredandtrue.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and click Ask. And if you would like to learn more about the Compassion Method, be sure to check out the Compassion Method Master Course, which can be purchased at compassionmethod.net. And as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount, which can be obtained by typing in the coupon code podcast50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code podcast50. Thank you again. Goodbye.